Hi, this is Andrew Torres from the Opening Arguments Podcast, and you are listening to Inciting Incident Podcast because you are wearing a belt.
Choose the news they want now, but we
people
overcome
choose the
that.
Facts they want now. I don't mind being dejected and rejected, but I'm not gonna be ashamed about it.
I can do that.
See, Joey, that's the beauty of argument, because if you argue correctly, you're never wrong.
The truth and a lie are not sort of the same thing.
Good evening. It's Friday and it's 7 p.m., which means it's time for the Inciting Incident Podcast, supported by our patrons and available on Libsyn, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Android, LiveJournal, Google Plus, The Hard Harry Show, News Radio, WHP 580, Rock and Emily's bed radios that are somehow appropriate for children that age, most tin cans connected with string, Tumblr, Snapchat, Zanga, LimeWire, WinMX, Napster. We'll have to spell it with two Y's there to escape Big Brother. The DCI, the Enchantment Under the Sea Dance, the plate in Pete and Pete's mother's head, and any other podcast app that somehow escapes this list. And now, here's your host, Al Lehman.
All right, and welcome to the Democratic Apocalypse here in Central Pennsylvania. My name's Al Lehman, and we're recording live on election night, unfortunately. This is terrifying. Brian, how are you feeling? What do you got in your bunker?
Well, I made a cool $50 this evening, and my jaw hurts like hell from it.
I did not realize I was setting you up for a UFC fight. That's good news. That'll come in handy once the protests start. And speaking of protests, Astrid, welcome back.
Hey.
Yeah. We are totally not sitting in our bunker right now, terrified. We are not doing that.
These two are terrified. I'm in the center of a calm oasis of inner motherfucking peace right now.
I'm basically like about to get dressed in black block again and go fuck shit up. Like, I am just not prepared to maintain some sort of like general civility at this point in time. I've had more coffee in the last
you really
week.
Have yes
and hey. 12 hours than I've had in the last year, and I've started smoking again. As soon as this is over, I'm gonna get blackout drunk and cry.
Okay, well,
and speaking of getting blacked out drunk and cry, the NFL joining us for some reason is former Vikings punter and author of the book involving the word sparkle ponies, I believe, is Chris Cluey. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We're still astonished that anyone listens to us, let alone people of your awesomeness come on our show.
How are you coping?
Sorry, what was that?
How are you coping tonight?
I have the Macallan Fine Oak 10-year, which apparently is a very nice Scotch whiskey.
That sounds perfect right now
for the occasion.
Yes,
we are certainly going to need all the things.
Yeah, I'm hoping I won't finish the bottle.
Well, it depends on how a few certain states go, because this is making me way too nervous. So in more pleasant topics, Chris, you've been an activist for a very long time. You know, you kind of got known for that in the NFL, where you were very vocal about your support for marriage equality. But for those who may not be aware of that or have followed the NFL, can you sort of give us a little bit of introduction to who you are and what brought you to this point?
Sure, yeah. So I played in the NFL for 8 years, primarily for the Minnesota Vikings, and you know, was fairly good at my job. At least I like to think so. I had a bunch of the team records for punting. And then in 2012, I spoke out for marriage equality in Minnesota because the state was thinking of passing an amendment that would have banned same-sex marriage. And a group contacted me and said, hey, would you like to get involved with defeating this? And I said, yeah, I think that's probably a good idea. We shouldn't enshrine discrimination into a state's constitution. That's generally bad. So got involved with that and wrote an open letter to Deadspin that went viral. It went very viral. And it was titled, They Won't Magically Turn You Into a Lustful Cock Monster.
Lustful Cock Monster by the name is my new alt progressive rock band.
Nice,
even better than Mr. Viral.
So essentially that happened. My special teams coach was not too happy with my standpoint, and they ended up cutting me at the end of the season. I brought a lawsuit against the team. They ended up having to settle, and yeah, that was my fall from the NFL. Now I'm the stay-at-home dad, and take care of my kids, developed a tabletop card game, and yeah, just trying to live life.
So you definitely have my attention with that last bit. I did a brief bit of homework because I've only recently become something approaching a sports fan. You know, I'm in my 30s now, so it's not something I ever grew up with, so I don't tend to follow a lot of specific players that much. And I was very interested to see not just your professional resume in the NFL as well as your activism, but I've noticed that you're kind of an avid gamer person.
Oh yeah, I'm a huge nerd. Like I've been playing.
You're in good company game. Here.
Yeah, perfect. I think I got my parents got me a Nintendo Entertainment System, the original NES. I want to say when I was like 8, and it
rock on, bro.
Yeah, ever since then, it's just been video games and then tabletop games and, you know, pretty much anything and everything.
No, I'm quite proud of myself in that regard. I've got a bi-weekly D&D group that's been going for about 3 months now, so we've approached a new personal best for me as far as a DM's concerned.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so that's one of the things, like, I always wanted to do pen and paper stuff. Like, I love D&D. I love Shadowrun. Even though I hate the fact that we're
you're talking my language.
Yeah, although it looks like we're going to start living in that universe, so that's a fan of that.
Just without all the awesome,
if Dunkelhaven comes roaring out of the ocean, then I'm going to be so happy because that means at least we have a chance.
Dunkel's on for president 2020.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That would be a good bumper sticker. So. But yeah, it's the my friends and I, like, we were never able to sit down and actually stick to it. And then once I got to the NFL and like and in college and stuff, I mean, I never had the time with football. Mm-hmm. But yeah, pen and paper, like, I've always loved that just because you can tell so many different stories in that environment.
Well, I'm curious of what some of those would be. Just for personal disclosure, I work for a college football team now. And I'm the unofficial special teams assistant in that when the punters punt and the kickers kick, I run and chase them because at our FCS school, there isn't anybody to pay to do that.
Yeah, nice. Every team needs a shag.
Definitely. It's my favorite form of exercise, chasing down stray punts and field goals. So I don't think people really appreciate how much work and effort goes into being an athlete, especially on the college level when you also have classes to worry about. Can you give us some insight on what it was like to maintain that balance successfully?
Yeah, so it's actually fairly difficult just because when you are at a college, like on scholarship for football, especially if it's a D1 college and like a well-known one. So for example, like I went to UCLA, you know, it could be like any big school. It's made very clear to you that, you know, you're there to play football. Like your schedule rotates around football. You know, the classes you can take are, okay, is this going to interfere with practice or not? And it's, you know, not, hey, are you doing well in your classes? It's, are you staying eligible so you can play football? And I think it's unfortunate because, you know, I had the misfortune of actually being fairly intelligent and being able to read very fast, so I didn't go to a lot of my classes because I was like, I can just read the book, you know, before the midterm and then go get a B or C on the test and then not have to worry about it. But I mean, it's one of those things where, like, you know, we're out there practicing 6-7 hours a day, maybe, you know, two of which are on the field, but then you got like meetings and weightlifting and all that other stuff. And you're expected to, you know, take X amount of classes during the semester or quarter as well. It's like there's just not enough time, and you know what your priority is, and it's football. So that's something that hopefully will change at some point, where if athletes are going to school to be an athlete, like, that's all it is. If they're not, then, you know, they can take classes once they're done. My wife is pointing at the TV as if something big happened. I'm looking at
California finally got counted. It's now 201 to 190 Trump. Trump. Ooh. So it's a lot closer than it was, but
yeah, it's California was pretty much figured for Democrat anyways. Like, that's not one of the swing states. The terrifying part is what the swing states are doing.
Yeah. We did our parts.
Yeah.
Yes, pretty much. I got my sticker and everything.
Yeah. So, anyways, to get back to your question.
We're doing a thing. Yeah,
there was a question there.
Let's break away from the impending apocalypse and move back to trivialities. You know, life must go on. Being in college and being an athlete, especially in a sport like football, like, it is very tough to do both things and, you know, and expect to make it to the NFL. Like, if you're going to make it to the NFL, then odds are you're focusing so heavily on football that there's just, you know, you've got nothing left for class. And I really feel that does a disservice to a lot of guys, because it's something that maybe they would have wanted to do had they had the opportunity, but they know that they're there for football. And so that naturally has to take priority.
So it's almost like a business. It really is. You know, you get recruited specifically to provide that service.
Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I remember a little while ago, I think when it was, I can't remember the specifics, unfortunately, but I think it was some college team somewhere or some college athletics program that was protesting the NCAA about actually earning money.
Northwestern, I think.
Yeah.
Northwestern.
And you realize... And you realize, especially after my experience, being friends with Al and going to see the Ivy League teams play, the difference in the what's called the business ethic, shall we, of university sports compared to what we see broadcast on television every Saturday. It's like, you know, we're not even talking about student athletes anymore. We're talking about semi-professional players by any definition. So we ought to treat them as such, no?
Yeah. No, I completely agree. Cause like there's this myth about the scholar athlete, and once upon a time, it was probably true, you know, because we didn't take sports nearly as seriously as we do now. But the fact is that the NCAA is close to, I think, $100 million a year revenue business just for football. Like, it's ridiculous how much they take in with basketball and everything else. So,
all the money.
Yeah, like if they're taking in that much money, and the people who are the product, and in some cases, you know, essentially workers working with no real protection or compensation for the injuries that they can pick up on the job, like, is that a business model that we want to have, considering those are also, you know, 18, 19, 20, 21 year old kids? Like, yeah, it's not little Timmy in the coal mine, but it's not that far off either.
Coming from someone who worked in a business very similar for a little while, as a former professional wrestler, where you have pretty much the same amount of protections minus getting to perform in front of 100,000 people, I can certainly empathize.
Yeah, like it's just so dumb across the board that, like, we've commodified this entire thing, but we don't treat the people who are performing that job as employees.
And we treat them as the independent contractors myth. It's my favorite thing.
Oh, God, yeah.
So as an independent contractor, you were one of the fortunate ones who went from NCAA football to the NFL. And that's both where, the epoch of the business is, but it's also sort of what gave you the platform to speak in one of my favorite states ever,
yeah,
Minnesota.
Really.
And it surprises me, as someone who spent a lot of time in Minnesota, that there was even really a debate about marriage equality, because...
Well, you remember, this is also the state that elected Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah. But it's also the one that put Al Franken in the Senate, just saying.
Right, yeah.
Go ahead, Chris.
Well, so that's what I found was the really interesting thing about Minnesota, is that, like, the bulk of sort of urban Minnesota, like downtown Minneapolis, you know, most of the outlying suburbs, and then some parts of like the southern part of the state, like they're very democratic. Like they're, you know, very cosmopolitan. They have a very broad view of the world. But it's when you get like 7-8 miles out of town where all of a sudden there's no buildings anymore and it's cornfields and like deer and shit, that you start seeing posters of like, you know, abortion is the devil, vote Michelle Bachmann. It's like, okay, yeah, this is a different world out here. So
yeah
it's like it's one of those things where I, you know, obviously the bulk of the state wanted marriage equality, but it doesn't surprise me that there were other parts of the state that were just like, you know, no, this isn't something we want to have happen. Because either, you know, it's their religious beliefs or it's their morality or whatever. I mean, which, you know, I think as we're watching this election unfold, we have to take into account, isn't just Minnesota, but a huge part of the rest of the country as well. How are we going to deal with that?
Yeah. And as our resident expert social activist here, Astrid, why don't you come in on here with some of your experiences? Maybe they have some similar paths.
Honestly, I am super, super fixated on what's currently going on. I when it came to gay marriage, it was just like every other like social activism thing that I've gotten into. I just sort of fucking like fell into it because some bullshit was happening and I wasn't down with it. So I ended up, like, accidentally becoming an activist by being a decent person.
Yep. Strange how that happens so often.
So I would assume that both of you faced a lot of backlash, because I can remember speaking out about it in the early aughts and being absolutely mercilessly bullied for it. Astrid, you were in the South, which just pretty much...
Also, like, a teenage girl. I'm just 22 right now.
Yeah, I forget that sometimes.
Yeah,
and
it's pretty easy, too, but I was still a kid,
yeah,
know?
And, Chris, you know, you're in a very you were in a very cosmopolitan city, but as you said, it was surrounded by a place that confused itself for Georgia, so...
I was just about to make that analogy.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
But then, you know, whenever I drove from Minneapolis to Duluth, I would always say, you know how close you're getting to either city based on how many abortion billboards per capita you see.
Yeah.
So, I know football's huge up there, not quite as religious as hockey, but once you really decided to speak out and, you know, make your voice heard on what for some reason is a controversial topic, what were the sides of the reaction that you had to deal with?
Well, I mean, the one thing I'll say is that the people in Minnesota were actually very, very understanding of, you know, speaking out on the issue. And I think that's ultimately why the state ended up defeating the amendment. It was like the first state to do so. It had passed in like 30 other states. And, I think part of the reason why was that, for me specifically, is the way I framed my argument was, you know, it was, yeah, this is a, you know, this is an ethical issue. This is a moral issue. You know, this is something where Americans deserve the same rights as other Americans. And I also framed it as, you know, in my letter that went viral, it was also a First Amendment issue. It was the fact that this Maryland state senator was telling another NFL player, Brendan Ibedejo, that he shouldn't be advocating for same-sex rights and using his official elected position to do so. And so I think when a lot of Minnesotans read my letter, you know, that really resonated with them was the idea of personal liberty, you know, of independence. And then they were able to have a conversation about same-sex rights that they may not have known how to have had. God, that sentence was a nightmare. but no, so like, you know,
time travel movie?
Yeah. they could talk with their friends and be like, hey, did you read this, you know, letter from the punter from the Vikings that had all the funny swearing in it? And then, you know, oh yeah, and also it talked about this state senator, and then oh yeah, and it also talked about same-sex rights. And now all of a sudden you're having that conversation when you might not have had that conversation otherwise. And I think for a lot of people, like I try to believe that most people are inherently good. This election is taxing that belief, but
I'm honestly, I'm right there with you, man.
Yeah, I'm going to try to continue believing it. And I think for a lot of people, it's once you actually do have that conversation and you understand, you know, you recognize what you yourself are feeling about a certain issue, then you understand, hey, I should do something about this. Because I would want someone else to act for me if the positions were reversed. You know, I have a sense of empathy. I can put myself in that other person's shoes. And, you know, I think that's ultimately why we ended up defeating it in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, I absolutely agree. And I'm just, like, personally super, super fucking exhausted right now. Like, November 5th, I went and counter-demonstrated against a Nazi rally at the Capitol building in Harrisburg. Like, last night, maybe the night before that? No, last night.
No, it was last night.
Last night, I went to a vigil for Shalik Moss, who was, like, the cop who murdered him, was acquitted yesterday. And now this, I'm just, come on, guys, I keep saying that we can do better.
Yeah.
I think, I really appreciate you saying sort of the magic E word there, empathy, which is the key thing that I think a lot of people kind of lose sight of when it gets time to either, you know, defending a moral position or assaulting somebody else's moral position, as the case may be.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. And this is actually something I talk about a lot when I do speeches at, like, colleges and high schools and stuff like that, is this idea that our technological progression is increasing exponentially. In that, you know, we're constantly inventing new things. You know, our means of communicating with each other and of, you know, our weapons of destruction and of aid are, you know, just increasing so fast. But at the same time, our empathic progression is increasing linearly, because that only gets affected by evolution, and evolution works over a very long time scale. And so unless we figure out a way to close that gap, like, we have to make a willing choice to pursue empathy, because it's not going to happen on its own very quickly. Like, if we don't figure out a way to close that gap, then eventually we're going to have someone push the button because no one tells them not to, or they don't understand why it's a bad idea to push it. And, you know, case, I hate to be a downer on this, but I was a history and poli sci major in college. Like, I studied this shit.
And
it's right now we have possibly a leader of the most powerful military on the world with access to the largest nuclear arsenal on the world. He might be elected and he had to have his Twitter account taken away from him. Like, that is horrifying in a way that, yeah, I don't think a lot of people understand. Because if he doesn't have that impulse control, I mean, how many stories have we heard from, like, the 40s and 50s and 60s of they were that close to pushing the button? And it was only because someone said, that's a bad idea, we shouldn't do that. Like,
you know, let's not blow up the world.
Yeah. I mean, it's just seeing this, it's like we can't just hope that empathy is somehow going to arise on its own. Like, we have to work for it. Like, we have to understand how to put ourselves in someone else's positions and why that's important. And if we don't do that, then, I mean, history shows us, like, civilizations aren't guaranteed. They collapse always. It's just a matter of time.
What were you trying to say there, Astrid?
Oh, I was going to say that people keep insisting that I should give Trump the benefit of a doubt, because I am not known for giving people who have been accused of rape more times than they've been accused of competence
a
doubt.
Oh, man, I needed
that.
Oh,
you broke Al this week. Yes, I'm not the one.
You should tweet that out, or else I'm going to steal it, because that is a fantastic line.
I'll tag you.
Yeah, there you go.
Please do.
I getting told to like give this person the benefit of the doubt, but honestly, I'm fucking terrified. Like, I honestly don't know how anybody, like, with a sense of empathy or like emotional intelligence or just like vision can look at that man and see anything but a malicious and hateful person. Like, I'm just terrified, honestly.
This is one of those things where I'm not I'm on the same page, but my weird devil's advocate sense is going, I can't help but feel like there's some kind of a myopia here between Trump supporters and Hillary supporters, in the sense that they ask you, oh, you know, give Trump the benefit of the doubt. You won't for your very legitimate reasons. You ask them to do the same to Hillary Clinton, they won't for the extremely frivolous reasons. And that gap is one of the most frustrating things to try and square, but God damn it if I'm not going to try anyway.
Yeah, and so not to butt in, but like a big reason we have that gap is because for 40 years, education has been slashed in this country. And
education has been slashed. I think also media has expanded.
Yes.
I mean, this is one of the... One of the things, the sound bites in our opening theme song with from the newsroom, it's not just people that choose the news it's not just that people choose the news that they want, people choose the facts that they want,
right,
and build their opinions from that.
Yeah, and if you aren't educated enough to understand, and I hate using it that way because it makes it sound like some
God, I know, bullshit. It's so problematic.
Like, but it really is the truth. Like, if you don't know why voting against something is voting against your own self-interest, well, then you're going to do it because, you know, what reason do you have not to?
Yeah.
I was actually in a conversation with a coworker today about basically her choices. She was voting for Trump. She wasn't like another coworker of mine who's very ostentatious about his affiliation. But she's very clearly conservative. And she brought up the topic of she just couldn't vote for Hillary because of the philandering that Bill got into. Yes. To which I actually asked her point... I actually asked her point blank to her face, what the fuck does that have to do with anything?
Yeah.
And she could not answer.
Like, and
she could not answer, but she would not budge on the position.
Yeah, it's... Well, and that's the other freaking horrible part. The tribalism that our system has devolved into... Where it's like, if you're not us, you're the other. And, I mean, that's just a breeding ground for fascism.
And if we're really going to talk about philandering, how about the guy with three wives who likes to talk about sexually assaulting people?
Yeah, which was the point, but I don't know. I'm the most frustrated. I'm not the most frustrated with people who have clearly staked out a position, you know, well-researched or ludicrous as it may be. The people that I have the biggest frustration with, and I talk about them pretty much every goddamn week, are the people who firmly staked out the it's all a scam, the government, everybody's in on it, you can't trust anybody in government, pox on both their houses. I'm sitting here going, you lazy motherfucker, that's all you are.
It's it's weird. Like, I just started watching Black Mirror about a week ago. I don't know if you guys have seen it or not.
No, I have not.
I watched part of the first episode, and it looked really, really cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. I highly recommend it. It's going to be super depressing if you watch it now, because, like, everything is dysfunctional. but they have this episode where it's like this blue animated bear, Waldo. He like, mouths off or whatever and ends up running for a, like, British parliamentary seat. And so there's this fantastic line where... the conservative guy who's running for the seat, who's projected to win because, you know, he's the incumbent and it's a conservative area. You know, he says that, yeah, it's bullshit. Like, this Waldo, it's making the whole system look like a joke. And he pauses and then he says, and maybe it is a joke. And then he pauses again. And he says, but it built these roads. And it's like, I don't think a lot of people realize that is that, like, yeah, you can be upset at the system. Like, you can think it's not being run correctly or properly or whatever, but like, we've got bridges and roads and infrastructure because that system is there. Like, running water and electricity are nice things to have. that's what the system gives you.
Now, Chris, come on. I mean, we knew you were going to bring up some controversial topics, but I will not sit here and have you supply that people need clean drinking water. I will not stand for it.
And Michigan is a contested state. What the fuck? How does that make sense?
Well, clearly they enjoy lighting their water on fire, so...
Oh, my God. Like, it's just... I can't fathom it.
Clinton won Virginia. That's great news.
That'll help.
anything. I need anything to help right now.
Honestly, this election is really just like me becoming or continuing to become more aggressively radical leftist and me going off the fucking deep end with it. So fingers crossed that I maintain some sense of sanity. Just for a little while longer.
I'm definitely going to be firing up my go fuck yourself hashtags from the hours to come. I can guarantee that. Chris, I want to kind of backspace a little bit and talk some more about your activism in the NFL. One of the things that I'm kind of curious about in light of the most recent, finger quotes thing that I can think of regarding the NFL and people speaking out is Colin Kaepernick. I really want to know kind of while you were sort of in the public sphere advocating for marriage equality, what was the reaction of your fellow players or your fellow Vikings in the locker room?
It was actually overwhelmingly positive. I had about... Good. Yeah, no, it surprised me. The guys that came up, I think I had probably about over half the locker room come up to me at some point or another. And it was interesting to see kind of what the breakdown was, because I had about 40% of the guys that came up to me that said, hey, you know, we really don't kind of agree with you on the same sex, you know, rights stuff, but we appreciate you speaking out for Brendan because that was a First Amendment thing. So, you know, we think that's great. You spoke out for him. And then about 60% of the guys that came up said, hey, you know, we think that letter was amazing. You did the right thing. Keep it up. And to me, the reason I found that interesting is because it very closely mirrored kind of the polling split in America at the time, where it was fairly consistently like 40-60, the 60% in favor of same-sex rights. And, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of people have the idea that the NFL locker room is kind of this, you know, troglodyte caveman atmosphere, and, you know, it's like smoky fire is burning against the wall as leopards are clucked.
Well, you guys are named the Vikings. I mean, it was implied, right?
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, we were named the Vikings, and there's the Buccaneers, and you know, it's you know, the players in a locker room are, you can see these social changes happening almost in real time because they're 20, 21, 22, 23 year olds. I mean, most guys in the NFL are straight out of college, and so you see those changes happening, and you know, it was really actually kind of cool to see, because it was like, all right, yeah, you know, I these guys get it. Like, they've grown up with a gay friend or a gay family member or a gay teammate or whatever. And it's, you know, they understand this shouldn't be a big deal. Like, this doesn't matter. Unfortunately, it's in the front offices and coaching staffs and ownership that you run into the, hey, we're all old white men who grew up in the 60s and 70s. So, yeah.
Damn hippies with your long hair and your music.
Yeah, exactly.
So, there's something I've always been curious about, and I know this gets brought up a lot in sports and entertainment in general, but there's always that outrage button where if, you know, famous people or famous athletes don't speak out about anything, they're accused of not being role models. But if they do speak out about something, they're saying, just shut up and play ball. Did you run into that a lot? Like, did you hear a lot of both of those tired cliches?
I definitely heard far more of the shut up and play ball. And unfortunately, I think that's become the prevailing sentiment in the country. And the reason why is because sports has become so corporatized. Like, there's so much money involved in sports now that, you know, guys, like, players understand that if you speak out, if you do anything that's not related to your sport, then, you know, they're just going to try to replace you. I mean, the fact of the matter is there's so many people interested in getting into professional sports, and, you know, the difference between talent levels is so thin that, yeah, the guy they replace you with may not be as good as you, but he's good enough. And so, you know, that discourages, I think, a lot of guys from using their platform to actually say something. And the thing is that athletes do have a platform. Like, we are role models. Whether you regard it rightly or wrongly, people look up to athletes. They want to know what athletes have to say, what they think. And I believe that if you have that platform, then you should use it to do something good as opposed to something bad. It just seems to make sense.
Fundamental terms, yay.
Well, it certainly doesn't seem like you have any regrets about using it, do you?
No, and I think that's one of the other things that not a lot of other guys in the NFL had, is that growing up, I mean, I played baseball and soccer growing up. I didn't play football until I got to high school. And for me, sports was always something I enjoyed playing sports, and I enjoyed being good at it, but it was never something I defined my life around. Like, I would far rather be reading sci-fi fantasy or playing video games or, you know, playing Magic or whatever than running around and doing shit. And so, you know,
let me know if you're ever in the Harrisburg, Pennsylvania area. I'll take you to a couple of good game stores.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. For me, it was always just something that, like, yeah, you know, I like being good at sports. I'll do it, but it's, you know, that's just part of my life. That's not all of my life. And for so many guys in the NFL and in other sports too, it's the opposite. That's the only thing they know. Like, that's the only thing they define their lives around. And when they lose it, like, that's it. I mean, and not to get too metaphysical here, but I feel like that's a problem in so many other parts of our society as well, is that so many people define themselves by their job, right? Like, it's if you don't have your job, then somehow you're not an individual or a human being or a person. And that's so ass backwards. like, yeah, you do a job, but that's not who you are. Like, it's part of who you are, but it's nowhere near the totality of who you are. But somehow we think that, no, it's your job that defines you. Like, that's all you can be. That's all you should be. And
wonderful lingering remnant of the legacy of the Protestant work ethic.
Yeah, exactly. and it sucks. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, we all do what we must to survive. We all do what we can and nothing more. But Jesus Christ, unless your job is, I can't even imagine what at the moment, it's not a reflection of your moral compass. It's not a reflection of who you are. It's what you do to survive.
Right, and we've just put such an emphasis on that defining who you are as a person that, like, people buy into that. They think, oh, yeah, you're an athlete. You should just shut up and play. Like, that's all you do. You're the pads on the field and the helmet and the logo on that helmet. Like, that's who you are. You know, it doesn't matter, like, what job you have. People will assume that's who you are, and we have to move past that because it's not good. The alternatives are not good.
I can certainly be the embodiment of that idea right now, because I worked in retail up until last year, but I did most of that while going to school and commuting 100 miles to the University of Pennsylvania. But
he's not bluffing.
And then when I stopped doing that and started working for the football team and starting the podcast, you know, writing the columns, you know, they're definitely, I have about 7 jobs right now and I'm still accused from people within my own family of being lazy. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there going, I travel over 1,000 miles a week. And in that traveling, I work for a college football team. I do a podcast. I write a column. I'm working on a book. I have a videography and photography business. And that's lazy?
Perspective is an amazing thing. And it's unfortunate that you have to kind of go very, very far out of your way to accumulate it. I think I'm not sure if I've said this on our air before, but I have definitely said it in your hearing. I will no longer make fun of anybody for working either a fast food job, a retail job, or an office job. Because I've got one of that last one now, and it's hard fucking work. Fuck Office Space. That is not what my life is like.
It's not The Office.
No, it's not that either.
So I have to imagine, speaking of traveling a lot, that being on the road all the time as a football player, you know, preseason, the whole season, and hopefully the playoffs. How much does that kind of travel fatigue wear on you? Because, you know, I have to go into Philadelphia 4 to 5 times a week, and I'm usually about ready to get out and start walking.
Yes. I will say the one good thing about football is that the travel schedule is not nearly as bad as it is in other sports like baseball or basketball, because the vast majority of our time we're at the team's practice facility, which tends to be located away from a major city center just because of.
Oh, dear. Did we lose Chris?
You know, I hope not.
Having the ability to get enough.
Chris, we stopped hearing you.
Real estate to make a practice field on. So it was, you know, essentially it was just like driving to work every day, which wasn't that bad. Like our travel, and then you also play half your games at home. So, you know, 2 preseason games, 8 regular season games. That's only 10 games that you're traveling for. Training camp sucks because you're gone for like 3 weeks. But in the grand scheme of things, I mean, that's not too long. So, yeah, I'd sure. say football, The travel actually wasn't too bad compared to, I think, the travel schedules that other sports traditionally go through. And I'm happy that that was the case because I like seeing my family and being at home. So it was nice.
So you were able to maintain that balance pretty well despite, you know, 4 months of the year being, not, if not revolving around football, heavily being involved with it.
Indisposed, shall we say.
Yeah, so the thing is, though, is that, like, during the season, our schedule was generally wake up around, like, 6:50 to head to the facility, eat breakfast. Then you're there at the facility until usually around, like, 4, 4:30-ish. So it's not, like, it's kind of like a 9-to-5 job in terms of, you know, you're going to be gone from the house for most of the day, but you'll get back in time for dinner to help make dinner. And, you know, it's really not that out of the ordinary, except for what you're doing while you're at the facility, because you're playing professional football. That's not like any other job.
Yeah, so yeah, you're a professional football player.
Yeah. So I'd say in terms of like time away from family and stuff like that, I mean, it's no different than any other 9-to-5 job in America. The only thing that differs is the details.
That's fair. Yeah.
So, you know, moving on to the more recent project that you've had, I was listening to you on No Illusions, and I really, really enjoyed that interview, and I'm glad Andrew hooked us up with you as well. But can you tell us a little bit about your book and how that came about?
Sure. So my book is called Beautifully Unique Sparkle Ponies on Myths, Morons, Free Speech, Football, and Assorted Absurdities, because I like alliteration.
Who doesn't?
Yeah. It's a collection of short stories and essays that some deal with humorous topics, some deal with serious topics, some deal with just random stuff that was swirling through my brain. The closest way I can come to describing it to you is like, this is what it feels like to be inside my mind, or as close as I can take you. So buyer beware. And it was one of those things where after the letter went viral, and, you know, I'm going through the season and like really getting a lot of national attention that normally like a punter just doesn't get, that I had, I think it was like 5 or 6 book publishers, you know, call me up and say, hey, you should write a book. Do you want to write a book for us? You should write a book. And it was after like the 5th or 6th one that in my head I was like, okay, well, these are the people who are in charge of books. So them asking me to write a book is if like 5 or 6 NFL teams are saying, hey, you should be a punter. And so it's like, okay, well, I should probably write a book. So found a literary agent and talked with him. And the first thing I made very clear to him was that, you know, I don't want this to be the traditional NFL book. Like, you know, this isn't going to be the, okay, I played in high school, then I went to college, and here's the obligatory overcame some distress story and, you know, succeeded in the NFL. Like, that's boring because everyone writes that book. And so, you know, I said I wanted to do something different. And I told the publisher that, Little Brown, and they were like, yeah, we're on board with that. And so, I think it turned out really well. Our our advertising for it kind of sucked because they had to squeeze it into like 2 months because that was like the free time I had during the off season. So it was a very aggressive PR campaign. But no, it was good. Got a lot of very positive feedback from it. The feedback actually I most enjoy getting from it was from people who said, hey, I'm a teacher at this school or that school, and you know, I would like to use one of these pieces as the basis for teaching something to my class. I was like, yes, by all means, please go ahead, because that's awesome.
That's amazing. That is very cool.
Yeah. Like that to me, that's worth everything, because that means someone actually like looked at your idea, thought about it, and said, this is worth passing on.
That's very cool. I got to say also, as the main brony on this particular panel, you already have my attention with a title that includes the word sparkle ponies. But
honestly, I need to read it.
Well, it'll be here tomorrow, so
I think I've got a couple of sparkle ponies up in my room somewhere, in fact.
So it's funny because I get that question all the time. They're like, oh, did you name it, you know, for bronies for My Little Pony?
Oh, really?
Like, yeah. Yeah.
Who's your favorite? Chris Cluey, who is your best pony?
Equestria. But no, so the reason I came up with the title is that when the original letter I wrote, the one, you know, titled "They Won't Magically Turn You into a Lustful Cock Monster," the phrase that everyone seemed to latch onto was "lustful cock monster." Shocking, I know. but when I was going to think up the title for the book, I was thinking, you know, I really kind of want to pay homage to this original thing that, like, this is what kind of got my name out there, right? Like, this is what people know me for. But at the same time, Barnes & Noble probably isn't going to start or stock a book that has the title Lustful Cock Monsters. Like, probably not going to see that on the new releases shelf. So
you've not been digging in the deep, deep alt romance section. Yeah, in Barnes and Noble these days.
Yeah, it's buried way back in that shadowy section where the lights are flickering.
Yeah, it's the replacement for you know, all the movie stores that no longer have the curtain. So yeah,
exactly. No, they put it up in Barnes and Noble. They brought back the bead curtains.
Oh, did they really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
No.
But
so, I was gonna say, there's a perfect opportunity to re-release it as Lustful Cock Monsters.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, me and Chuck Tingle will get together. Oh man. But yeah, so I actually wrote a kind of Bowdlerized version of the letter where you know self-censor with just ludicrous names and, you know, combinations of words and stuff. And the phrase I came up for to replace Lustful Cock Monster was Beautifully Unique Sparkle Pony. And so I was like, okay, yeah. I can name my book Beautifully Unique Sparkle Ponies. No one will know what I'm talking about. But I'll know, and that's all that matters.
And I make the most special snowflake of a character you've ever seen. Yeah.
So, but yeah, and then I also helped. I also figured it would probably help people understand that this wasn't your normal football book. Like, you know what you're getting into with this.
I know we'll be happy to dive in. Like I said, it'll show up tomorrow. I couldn't get it quite in time to read before the show, but I think there's three people in this house who will definitely be reading it.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks.
So we absolutely. And we do all kind of know you from the football and the social activism part. What's one of the, you know, allude to one of the stories that people may not be as familiar with? And obviously, you know, you don't have to give away all of it because we want people to read the book, too.
Okay. So my favorite story in there, it's called On Use of Weapons as a Tribute to Ian Banks. Fantastic sci-fi writer, unfortunately passed away a couple of years ago, but if you haven't read his stuff, I highly recommend it. And it really kind of encapsulates my, you know, sort of thoughts and arguments on the idea of rational empathy and the idea of the Fermi paradox. So are you guys familiar with the Fermi paradox?
I've heard those words in sequence, but I might not be up on my actual definition.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. Go ahead.
Tell us anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, the Fermi paradox is the idea that it was thought up by Enrico Fermi. He was a physicist in like the early 20th century. said that, okay, if the universe is so vast, and we know, you know, there's so many trillions of stars and so many billions of galaxies, and we know there's planets orbiting them, why haven't we seen signs of alien life out there? Right? Like, it's just simple statistics says that we should have seen something. And then it's only been bolstered over the years by, you know, mathematicians and the astronomers trying to figure out, you know, hey, why haven't we seen anything? And the, I think there was an equation figured out that said a Kardashev type one civilization, that's a civilization that's maximized the output that their sun is putting out. They could colonize an entire galaxy within like 1,000 years, which is an eye blink in geologic time frame, right? Like we've been around for 15 billion years. Like 1,000 years is nothing. And so the Fermi.
Well, depending on what sci-fi fiction you read, humanity will achieve that in about 30,000 years or so.
Yeah, we're working towards it. But so the idea behind it is that, okay, you know, here's the Fermi paradox. Why haven't we seen alien life out there? Why haven't we seen signs of anything? You know, we haven't seen any partial Dyson spheres or stars being occluded by obviously intelligent life developing something. And so, you know, what's the reason for that? And so the argument I put forward in that piece is the reason we don't see signs of other intelligent life out there is because intelligent life kills itself before it can ever achieve, you know, a state where it can affect the universe on a scale that some other civilization can see it. And the argument I make behind that is because of this disconnect between how quickly your technology can progress versus how quickly your empathy progresses. Because, I mean, let's look at it. When we developed the nuclear bomb, like there was some worry within the scientific circles that detonating it would cause a chain reaction of all the nitrogen in Earth's atmosphere and essentially scorch the entire planet. Like, and they were pretty sure that that wouldn't happen. But they weren't absolutely sure. and they pushed the button anyways, because they had to, right? Exigent circumstances, they felt they had to push the button. And so they did it. Luckily, the Earth didn't explode. But like we're talking now in our modern day society, we have GMOs. We have bioengineered crops. We're talking about private corporations going out into space, possibly tugging asteroids into Earth orbit, developing them as orbital infrastructure. I mean, like, you can cause a whole lot of damage to a planet if you just drop a rock on it. Like, the dinosaurs figured that out about 65 million years ago.
65 million years too late.
Yeah, they figured it out. Oh, come on. I thought they were killed off by the flood.
Actually, Younger. It was Raptor Jesus. He led them to glorious rest. But
why is that not a cartoon yet?
That would be a cartoon. But yeah, so the point is that, you know, unless we figure out, you know, how to keep ourselves from pushing the button, well, we're just going to join every other intelligent species that has existed out there. And I firmly believe there have been a multitude of intelligent species that have existed out there. They just never were able to put a sense of empathy within themselves, and they killed themselves. And I mean, shit, watch this election right now. Like, that's,
yeah.
It doesn't take a genius to figure it out.
Yeah. We are currently about 78% likely to vote in someone who goes on trial for child rape in December. Go, yeah, America. Yeah,
thanks, America.
Oh, oh man.
Well, on that pleasant note.
I think it was John Stewart who said in a bootleg stand-up special from 2006, the planet will not be ended by a violent overthrow. It will be ended by smart people in white coats. Yeah. The last line of dialogue the Earth will hear is, it worked.
Yeah, exactly. It's you know, hey, we pushed the button. It worked. Hooray. Oops. Planet cracked.
So Chris, as someone who wrote a book with the word sparkle ponies in it, and we're looking down the democalypse, as we put it, can you give us a reason for optimism on this night, since the likelihood of this is looking very, very unpromising?
Reason for optimism. As a history and poli-sci major, bureaucracies tend to change very slowly. Trump is a harbinger of the apocalypse, but it is unlikely that he will usher in the apocalypse, and that, yeah, Republicans have control of the Congress, and yeah, they're going to have, they, God, I hope they don't have their president, but if they do, they can make some changes, but there's still enough people out there who understand why those changes would be awful. And I actually tweeted about this, I think it was like a week ago, that we're rapidly approaching conditions for a civil war within this country. And
you're not the only one.
Yeah, no, and so that's one of the things is that, like, if we can keep the stupidity contained within ourselves and not drag the rest of the world into it, we have a chance. And that's not going to be very good for those of us living in America, but, you know, weighed against the future of the planet, I would rather take that. But yeah, it's not looking good for the forces of light right now.
No. And we'll try to put some kind of positive spin on this, because by the time this airs, we may be already. Yeah. So Chris, if people wanted to follow you or, you know, learn more about you, read more of your stuff, how would they go about doing that?
Yeah. If you want to hear more gloomy predictions, I'm on, I'm, on Twitter at Chris Warcraft, and that's pretty much it. So, I'm pretty sure Trump's going to shut Twitter down within the first year or so of his presidency, because I will try to mock him endlessly until he blocks me or sends the FBI to my front door. Who knows what'll come first? But yeah, that's it on Twitter at Chris Warcraft.
Well, Chris, I really want to thank you for spending time with us. Absolutely. Despite the increasing likelihood that we just elected a reality show rapist as our next president. I can't wait to read your book, and I hope to have you back on sometime, because this was an absolute delight.
Yeah, just let me know. I mean, it's if I'm not in one of the work camps, I'll probably have free time.
Well, if you're there, chances are we'll be there too, so we'll see you either way.
Yeah, all right, sounds good.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot.
Yeah, no, thank you.
All right, have a good night.
Inciting Incident couldn't keep bringing you commentary, interviews, and fantastic guests without help from you, the patrons. You can support the podcast on a monthly basis at patreon.com/incitingincident, which gives you access to many great rewards, including a free t-shirt if you pledge $5 or more. You can also support the show by subscribing, rating, reviewing, and commenting. To contact them about ideas, guests, disagreements, fisticuffs, salmon slapping, rebel rousing, or just plain old tomfoolery, you can email them at incitingincidentpodcast@gmail.com. On Facebook, at facebook.com/incitingincidentpodcast. Or yell into a tin cup and hope it's connected to one of our aforementioned string networks. And now, back to the show.
All right, so welcome back. We're here. Brian went to bed. We're just trying very, very hard to not be really fucking depressed.
Varying levels of success, I would say. What's coping?
Yeah, it's a very distinct possibility that by tomorrow nobody in this house will be safe in their own country anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, as someone so eloquently pointed out to you on Twitter, the fact that our next president might be a fucking rapist isn't important right now.
Yeah. Fuck that. Fuck that. Fuck that. Fuck you. Fuck that. That'll never stop being important.
Yeah. Ever. And to even imply that it's not is just a symbol of the problem.
Yes. It's fucking reprehensible, honestly.
Yeah. And
disgusted.
Somehow there's no outrage over the fact that they trumped up a bunch of a bullshit reopening of the emails case with the leader of the FBI, clearly just saying, I'm trying to influence the outcome of this election, because apparently, you know, we can only hold two thoughts in our head at once, and they have to be emails and Benghazi. Never mind the guy who's bragging about fucking sexual assault.
Like I just fucking said on Twitter, I can care about multiple things at once. Damn.
So, you know, this was supposed to be a fun episode, you know, and it was, don't get me wrong. Chris Cluey is amazing, and
I didn't realize I was a fan until tonight. Now I follow him on Twitter.
Yeah, and your tweet mentioning him has been retweeted more times than anything I've ever written combined, I'm sure. I know it's been liked more times than anything I've ever put on social media ever. So we're really hoping this episode takes off for us and introduces us to some new amazing people. And speaking of which, Astrid has brought us another Patreon donor.
What can I say? I have the best friends in the goddamn world. I love you guys.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us something amazing about this particular one? Kevin Watson.
Kevin. Oh my god, I love you, Kevin. Honestly, thank you so much for being yet another example of the benefits of forming a strong community with people both in your area and across the fucking world. I love you so much. Kevin has a badass baritone. He's one of the most kind-hearted and gentle people I know. He's incredibly fucking intelligent. He's honestly, when I need to feel like what I do matters, like trying to educate people and fight. You know, when I personally need a fucking pick-me-up, I just pull up some shit Kevin wrote and I can read it and be reminded that it actually does matter. We are impacting people. The message is spreading.
Yeah.
Bless Kevin.
You know, I think I owe it to you that this show went from being what it was to what it is. And I'm grateful for all the people you brought on, and most of all, I'm grateful for you. You've really impacted my life in a positive way and really helped me reevaluate everything.
I appreciate that. I do my best. Like I said earlier, we do what we can and nothing more. That's all I expect from people. Do what you can. Without, like, hurting yourself, if that's not something you're willing to do for your cause, which is, like, totally a valid thing.
Yeah. And I also feel we should thank Mind Aquarium, who not only designed some new logos for me, but also just gave me my new business cards, and they look phenomenal. Terry, who is also our patron, thank you so much. We had a great time sitting down in Lobsterhead Studios, hanging out with her and her husband, who is probably, next to Chris Cluey, the most likable person on the planet.
Pretty fucking likable.
Yeah. Also want to thank our sponsor, Warrior of the Crystal, the card game. I'm sure I would understand some of those words if put into a particular order, but right now, my brain is being fried by the fact that we are electing a rapist reality star to be president of the fucking United States. I can't stop saying that because, you know, Bill Maher, I know you're not a big fan, but he took a lot of shit for something he said on CNN while talking about Sarah Palin. He said, you know, they asked him, do you think Sarah Palin could become president? And he said, I hope not, but I wouldn't put anything past this stupid fucking country. Yeah, I can't think of a better quote for this moment.
Honestly, I just, you know who's not on Patreon, but really fucking should be? I've lately spent some time with the organization Central PA Antifa, which is just short for anti-fascist or anti-fascism, whatever. These guys, there was a neo-Nazi and KKK rally on the Capitol building in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And these guys had, like, 2 months' notice. I don't know what the fucking assholes were expecting. Fuck Nazis. I don't know what they're expecting, but they managed to get activists and anti-fascists from all over the fucking East Coast. It was amazing. All of the press that has resulted from it has been just about, like, anti-racism. Like, people are generally pretty iffy on the idea of silencing opinions in the States, but I don't really give a shit. I am absolutely of the belief that tolerance of intolerance is absurd. So, yes, Central PA Anti-Fash, if you had a Patreon, I would subscribe monthly. I think everybody should check them out. They have a Facebook page, and they have on their Facebook page one of the people, they have a fundraiser link going, one of the anti-Nazi counter-protesters was arrested, and it's like doubling as a fundraiser for the organization and that guy's legal fund. So check it out, please. I kicked in $20. I feel like it's a great way for everybody to pay their dues if that's something they support. Which, it's pretty hard not to hate Nazis if you're an ethical person. IMHO.
Yeah. common thoughts running through my head as I watch this. You know, we just got CNN up in the studio, and I... Oh, God. You know, I gotta say, there, if there's one thing that's going to come out of this, we are going to get louder and more aggressive. Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, people already fucking are, like, the left has been getting increasingly militant, and it's honestly just the fucking response people are having to the situations we're being put in like this. Like I said earlier in the episode, pretty much all of the kinds of activism I've fallen into was just an accident. I just sort of did the ethical thing and became an activist. And I feel like that's happening to more and more people.
Yeah. I think it was Chloe who also said, you know, being a decent person. Like, that, yeah. You know, that's how he ended up on those things. And, you know, we have a lot of this deference where we try to say that, you know, even if we don't agree, we can agree to disagree and get along. Well, there's certain perspectives where I can't do that. There's probably less with you.
Yeah, I'm not tolerant of intolerance. I feel like intolerance to oppression is just ethics and action. You can fucking quote me on that. I stand by it.
Yeah, absolutely. Trying to find the right words, but there's not too many of them right now. But, you know, if you're homophobic, if you're transphobic, if you're racist, if you're misogynist, I'm not going to see your point. You know, I don't... I'm sick of this faux victim mentality of white Christian people. I'm sick of their whining. I'm sick of them bitching because they don't get everything they want. I'm sick of them bitching because their perspective isn't the only one that's allowed. And they may have just put this fucking asshole in the White House.
I want everybody for a second to just think about, instead of, like, the ideology you subscribe to, who is fucking agreeing with you right now? Because, like, right now, a lot of conservatives and even a lot of liberals are finding, or liberals who hate women, hate Clinton, are finding that it's the fucking Nazis and the KKK and the white supremacists and these extremist fucking hate groups that are agreeing with them. And I'm finding that I'm more radical than I gave myself credit for. I'm finding myself more and more what it's going down called militantly anti-fascist. You just do you want to go down associated with fucking Nazis, or are you tired of this shit? And if you're tired of this shit,
stop supporting the guy who was endorsed by the Nazis.
Stop it. Just stop it. Fucking find something to engage in unity with. Find a sense of solidarity. If we all group together, if we help each other get the numbers, we can fucking make change. And honestly, protesting is such an amazing way of building a community. Like, it really is. It serves an incredibly fucking important function in society.
So why don't you tell me about your protest, and more importantly, tell these people who say that protests never do anything what protesting can do.
Protesting can do fucking amazing things, but, like, you can't sit here and tell me that protesting never does anything when the fucking point was no Nazis in Harrisburg. Like, that's what the counter demo was about, and no Nazis were heard that day. Like, I don't know a single fucking thing the Nazis had to say, except one of them had a shitty President Trump build the wall poster that made me feel slightly, God, what's the word? Pyromaniac? Pyromania? I don't know. I don't know what the correct word tense for this word form is.
I don't either. So whatever. Just, we know what the idea, you wanted to set things on fire.
Yeah.
And what more is there really to say than that, since voters are doing that for us, metaphorically, and probably literally.
If I had me setting fire to a poster, is not going to do anywhere near the damage that having an actual rapist and white supremacist in the White House is going to do.
Yeah, I'm...
Even if you don't agree with the methods of militants, quote-unquote, do you agree with the results? Do you agree with the goals?
And you know what really fucking pisses me off, and I think you're going to be proud of this too, is the fact that the reputation of millennials is that they're lazy and they don't care about anything, and yet they turn around and say also that you're too militant and extreme. It can't be fucking both ways.
It really can't. And, like, honestly, at that fucking counter demo, it was beautiful, it was amazing. Honestly, it was everything I was hoping it was going to be. I think it went the best it could have possibly gone. There were people of all ages. Like, there was a little child who took the bullhorn at one point and said, "Nazis, go home."
Yeah.
There were people of all different backgrounds from all over the fucking place. And everybody's just like, oh, those white college kids. Like, true. A lot of them were white. That's fair. But white people are able to do shit like that without getting shot. Or at least we're less likely to. Why wouldn't we? Nazis and the KKK should not feel welcome.
Yeah. I don't know how that's even a thing.
Me neither, honestly.
So there's got to be something that can cheer this up a little bit, right? There has to be something. Is there anything that can possibly come out of this in a good way?
I think we're at a turning point. I feel like from a sociological perspective, we are under all of the conditions necessary for some serious, like, spicy revolution to go down. I feel like we are at a point where we're ready to fucking end this shit. And hopefully the entire world doesn't have to die to do that, but I'm not the one with the goddamn nukes.
Yeah.
So there's not too much I personally could do about it.
Well,
I'm gonna try to stop it, though. I'm gonna try.
Our distant weed cabin looks better by the day. So I think we're going to wrap it up there before this turns into one of us collapsing and passing out. So if we're in error, we're sorry to bring you down, but it's increasingly likely that we will be reporting the facts before it's official. So in the event that we are dealing with this guy as our president, I am only going to say right now, we will not be silenced. We will not let this go without saying everything that we need to say louder. And people like Chris Cluey, people like Lanky, who was in here earlier, people who are genuinely making a good difference in people's lives, we will go out of our way to find them. And we will stand with them against anybody who uses the tactics of this insane person that may be our representative to the world. And I want to emphasize that. Think of the message we just sent to the rest of the world by possibly electing this guy. Everybody laughed about how hilarious Brexit was. Well, we just fucking trumped that. No pun intended.
I think I'm going to propose to my friend Tim in the UK tonight. But at the same time, I don't think I can really leave yet. I don't know. I have a lot of fucking conflicting emotions. I think I'm, like, on one hand, too depressed to handle this shit right now. And on the other hand, I need y'all to get it together. Fucking organize.
Yeah.
Unionize. Fight for what you believe. Question fucking everything.
Well, I know I and all of our Patreon people and listeners don't want you to leave, so... especially me, though.
I've got work to do. Especially me. I want to fucking say, fuck this shit, I'm done. But I've got work to do. We all do.
Yeah. So, by the time this airs next Friday, we may be already well on the way to that. But in case we're not, let's get to fucking work. Thank you to Chris Cluey for putting up with us. And thank you to all the Patreon donors who got to hear this before the election was decided. And in the event that there are new listeners, thanks to Chris Cluey, we're normally happier than this, but it's hard to be under these circumstances. This has been 67 episodes. Thank you, Astrid. Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Chris, once again. And thank you, Heather, because I tried to get you on the show, but you weren't answering your messages, so I guess we'll try again next time. The preceding podcast is owned by It's a Shameful Thing Lobsterhead, LLC. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. For inquiries or media, please contact P.A. Torres at patorres.com.